poetry.
I'm a writer for children and young people.
I'm a novelist, and the extract here is from my fifth novel.
This is World Words from the British Council, a 10-part series about contemporary British literature.
I'm the national poet for Wales. It's the west of the British Isles, near the Irish Sea.
In each programme, we meet a writer and discuss one of their poems or novels.
I spend most of my days writing poems or attempting to write poems.
Here's Karen Brodie with World Words.
In today's programme, we enjoy the rhythm and the sounds of a poem which contains many unusual images. We talk to the poet and hear some strong reactions to the theme from a group of student readers. Get ready to meet today's World Words guest and find out a little about him and the poem he'll be reading.
Hi, my name is Inua Elams, and I was born in Nigeria. I currently live and work in London. I spend most of my days writing poems or attempting to write poems. I also write plays and work as a graphic designer, but I describe myself as a word and graphic artist. The poem is from a larger collection of poems called Candy-Coated Unicorns and Converse All-Stars.
This title presents us with two strong visual images. Unicorns, which are imaginary creatures, rather like horses, with a single long horn coming from their foreheads. And these unicorns are candy-coated, like sweets. And the other image, Converse All-Stars, refers to a famous brand of shoes, popular around the world. Inua explains that he likes the idea of two opposing forces or concepts of this kind.
A unicorn, to begin with, is a mythical creature, essentially a white horse with a horn. And a candy-coated unicorn, I guess the idea behind that is something magical that is very sweet and beautiful at the same time. And Converse All-Stars, they're a very well-known pair of trainers of footwear that everyone has. Going back to the history of basketball from the deep south of America, they were worn originally by black basketball teams, and it began from there, and these days are worn a lot by rock stars. I just had the idea, and I was struck with both images, and I tried to figure out why, and out of that came the poem. I didn't really plan it. I had no idea where it was coming from. It was just there, really.
Inua says the poem that came out of this title is set in a cafe, where we hear a conversation between the narrator and a woman.
So in this poem, there are two strangers meeting and talking. So that is something that everyone can relate to meet someone in a social space. So it's very, very simple, a setting, a ground space to have a conversation. And by that, everyone can relate to such a setting in order to talk.
As they talk, each shares something they are crying about. We learn that the woman has been badly beaten by an abusive boyfriend, though it seems she still loves him. As the poem develops, it keeps surprising us with new images, going beyond their dialogue to bring in more universal themes. As we now listen to Inua reading his poem, sit back and enjoy the rhythm and sounds of the poem, along with the images and ideas that it generates.
Candy-coated unicorns and Converse All-Stars. She asks what I'm crying for. I tell her it's the same thing dolphins are dying for, that in my last life I was ultramarinian, and though now I am a landlover, I often re-swim the blue. These tears are rewashed waters of B.B. King's daughters plugged into the ocean's floor, resorrowed and renewed. These tears are the blues in bloom. I ask her what she's crying for. Shoulders slump, head rises. Bloodshot are the whites of her eyes, and her pupils sparkle bright black. Her legs begin to buckle. I catch her before she hits the cafe floor. In my arms, she whispers between sobs, it's the same thing you're crying for. How, in the last hour, her boyfriend was a boxer, and her jaw will testify. Her whole body sighs as if speaking makes it a truth she can no longer deny. and I half carry, half drag her to the round table. The cafe is littered with newspapers that tell bitter fables of war in the Middle East. Snatched snippets of its distant screams pierce this bubble of brown water and baked yeast. She tells of the boyfriend of a beast. As she speaks, blood drips from her broken lips, slipped into her coffee cup. Before I can stop her, she takes a sip. It is a thing going where it should not, and I'm hoping she runs like her blood and lets the beast be. She holds on to this broken love like a war-torn mother holding to a dying child whose watery eyes won't let her see it is all in vain. I squeeze her shoulders, hold her hand, say it's okay, let it rain. We'll be here when the smoke clears. Two strangers wearing Chuck Taylor trainers swapping tears. A poster on the wall reads, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate, but that we are powerful beyond measure. We can reason faster than speeding fists, can whisper louder than atomic voices, can dream bigger than nuclear slaps, and the only excuse that could stand is not having enough pillows to go around. Yet, we are fearful. But in this new wasteland of coffee cups and couches, I'll be brave. I'll dare to dream a candy-coated unicorn in this bruised princess. Mistake cold hot chocolate for Kenyan beer. Crunch ice cubes like frozen river water. And when backpacks become briefcases and this table stables wars, we will sit and converse like all stars."
You're listening to World Words from the British Council, and we just heard today's guest writer, Inua Elams, reading his poem, Candy-Coated Unicorns and Converse All-Stars. Did you notice at the very end of the poem, he makes a reference to the title when he says, "We will sit and converse like all-stars"? Images like that were very much enjoyed by a group of students in Namibia. But our readers were most deeply affected by the circumstances of the woman beaten by her boyfriend.
When I read the poem, I get angry. Because it's obvious that this woman, her boyfriend is abusing her. But at the same time, she defends him and she loves him.
It makes me feel that men tend to be more abusive to women, and the woman actually used to suffer a lot and still suffer.
It depends on the way we were raised. It's tradition that the man is the head of the house and you are just property. And it's been in people's mind and women's minds for a very long time. And I do not believe all women are like that.
When I read the poem, I get the picture that the coffee shop is unorganized, like her life. And there is no one to take charge and to put things in perspective.
As the poem progresses, there is hope in the sharing of ideas and the power of the human spirit.
I like the last part, which is, "And when backpacks become briefcases and this table stables war, we will sit and converse like all stars." This kind of tells the reader that the person plans on doing something about their situation and getting out of it.
The discussion led to questions for the author.
I'd like to know, did you experience something like this firsthand? And if you did, what did you do to get out of it?
How much of this poem comes from your own experience?
None of the poem comes from my experience. It's entirely fictional. I mean, I have sat in cafes and overheard conversations of the world and of conflict. So it's a mixture of memories as opposed to my own experience. In the group of poems, I fool around with transformation and communication and the belief of mine that as long as there's space given to discuss and to debate, that everything can be resolved. Perhaps, you know, someone who works with word, that's rather fanciful and a realistic way of seeing the world. But it's what I believe.
Inua evokes this mixture of memories by means of unusual images and use of language. For example, the narrator describes himself as an ultramarinian. Is this a colour or is it someone living in the deep ocean?
I think it's a common word, but it's unusual in this setting. I like it. It's just, it holds the idea of a color and of the sea. And I've just always liked the concept and play with it a lot. When I write, I try to give very tiny vistas to worlds, whether they be just ideas or whole new concepts.
The poet used words that are incredibly descriptive. They give you a picture of what the setting looks like. So I admire him for that.
This is a line that I like. Her pupils sparkle bright black. The idea of black sparkling rather than soaking in color, I just thought would pose a little twist perhaps on the image, on the idea of a pupil and its absorption of light and refraction of light.
He also creates sound effects. Let's listen to the lines where he says something is a thing going where it should not. The woman has been bleeding into her coffee and she takes a sip.
As she speaks, blood drips from her broken lips, slips into her coffee cup. Before I can stop her, she takes a sip.
Could you tell us about some of the words you've used and how you've played with language to create an effect?
Lots of S's and surface sounds, in the sense, if you think about the scale of sound from vowels, from A down to O and U, those words dance across the highest spectrum of sound, I'd say. Drips on a broken lips. And I guess I was fooling around with the idea of a tongue and of snakes and of whispering, a little bit to hint at the idea of a knife or blade of something tearing the skin.
These special sound effects are heard throughout the poem. I wanted to understand how Inua achieves such a rhythmic and musical effect, even though the poem doesn't rhyme in the way that a classic poem might.
A lot of my poetry I deal with and work with rhyme, but in a personal sense. I mean to say, when rhyme is used, I'd say, if you think about the canon, if you think about Keats, and you think about things like sonnets, they're very structured rhyme and put in specific places. And the way I write is to scatter it loosely. So it sounds like musical conversation. It sounds fresh and delicious and new to the ear constantly.
So how exactly does he achieve this fresh musical conversation, this loose scattering of rhyme?
I play a lot with internal rhyme, rhymes that fall in the middle of sentences or three-quarter way through, and that guides and puts a very loose structure into the poem or builds in the idea of one. A friend of mine described the way I write as walking through a field, and when you get to the other end, you turn around and just see bits of white stones which represent rhyme scattered across. The rhymes are loosely dispersed as seeds.
With this beautiful image of a field with the white stones of rhymes loosely dispersed, we must end this edition of World Words from the British Council. My thanks, of course, to Inua Elams for joining us, and also to our student readers in Namibia. If you want to find out more about Inua's work, his first name is spelt I-N-U-A, Inua, and then Elams is E-L-L-A-M-S, Inua Elams. I leave you with the chance to hear the last part of that poem again.
Oh, dare to dream a candy-coated unicorn in this bruised princess. Mistake cold hot chocolate for Kenyan beer. Crunch ice cubes like frozen river water. And when backpacks become briefcases and this table stables wars, we will sit and converse like all stars.
That was World Words with Karen Brodie. For a copy of that poem and more information, go to the British Council's website. The address is www.britishcouncil.org/literature.